Gay presents Conversations with a Legend.
Around here, we hustle for a living. Around here, we grind for a living. Around here, we hustle for a living. Around here, we grind for a living.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another exciting edition of Up On Game Presents Conversations with a Legend. I got the man, the myth, the legend himself, Mike Rucker House. Hey, look, my man used to wreck them for Carolina, got national championships, did his thing, got Nebraska. That was before they came to the Big Ten and started getting spanked by the Big Ten. But we won't go there. I guess I did go there. But that's a, national championships are national championships.
That's right.
And this man has two of them. And, I mean, had a great NFL career, played with some great players. But the most important thing about this fella here is his heart, his willingness to give back. You can see the Legends community logo on the vest. Let's just jump right into it. Ruck, appreciate you coming into the show and being a part of it. Just talk to me a little bit about the Legends community. Obviously, everybody that I bring on that is a part of the Legends community, I want them to put it out there in terms of what the Legends community represents, what it represents for us as former players. I was a part of it when it was launched, so I know how important this initiative is and the group is and what you guys are providing and doing. Just shed some light on it, because you've been there from day one and you have a very, very unique perspective on the Legends community and how it serves the Legends community.
Yeah, the Legends community, you know, Troy Vincent, Tracy Perlman, I'll never forget that phone call and exactly where I was at when I got that phone call, basically saying, look, we want to create a space for the NFL brotherhood. You know, we do things together and we're around each other more than sometimes we are with our families, and to find ways for us to reconnect with each other after we've played this game at a high level. And we found a big need. And so it's really an opportunity to serve and to give back. And that's really where my heart was and my heart is. And so it was like a match made in heaven. And so being able to do that over the last 8 years has definitely been a blessing, not only for me, because actually it's helped me in my transition, believe it or not, helping other guys through their transition. And so the Legends community is basically, you know, a group of men that are here to serve our fellow brothers. We've got over 20,000 guys that have played this game out there. And we want to be able to connect, talk, celebrate each one of them. And part of that is, how do we communicate? And so, you know, in the past, if you've been in the locker room, we can hide pretty good. And we change numbers and change emails pretty often. And so part of our job is just finding ways that we can connect, whether it's through the phone, text, or email, or through social. And being able to bring guys back to different events, just we can love up on each other. We can laugh. We can play. Because one thing that, you know, guys to a man miss is the jokes that go along in the locker room, right?
Sure,
the laugh and
absolutely.
Mess around. And yeah. Once you retire, you can't take a banana peel and stick it in your wife's stiletto, you know, in her shoes. That just doesn't fly,
you're
right?
You're going to get in trouble. Yeah, you're going to get in
trouble.
You're in trouble.
And so for us to be able to get back in environments where we can laugh and mess around is something that we really enjoy.
Love that. Now let me ask you this, because you deep in with the Legends community. In the aspects of business and brand building and awareness and exposure, a lot of times it just takes having a platform and an opportunity to resurface. I know for me, if it wasn't for Troy Vincent, if it wasn't for the Tracy Perlmans, if it wasn't for heck, the commissioner himself, I don't get the opportunities that I have received and have had the pleasure of being able to be a part of in media and in my professional life post-football career. Just how does the Legends program help in that way? And if not, is it evolving into that? Because I just know this. There are a lot of us that are talented, a lot of us that are gifted. I mean, I look at someone like yourself who, you know, could be in front of the camera and be in the radio and do a lot of things to be able to communicate within building a brand, building awareness of who you are And having a vehicle like the NFL Legends Community, awesome vehicle to have to do so.
You know, when you look at different generations, you know, some of us didn't necessarily have some of these platforms that the younger generation has right now. And so sometimes we might look at it like, oh, what do I need that? And I think that, you know, you hear a lot about social media and platforms, maybe sometimes in a negative light. Well, this is a way that it's brought a positive light when you talk about self-branding. And so depending on where you're at, it might come easy, might come natural. And then for others, it might be work. And so I think what the NFL Legends Community provides is a platform for you to be educated on how to build your brand. So I think that that's huge right there. Is like, we're not going to assume that you know how to build your brand. So for people that want to know how to build a brand and to continue to do that or step their foot in there, the NFL and the Legends Community can help with that. And I think that that's one of the things as we sit in our meetings and we look at, you know, all the information, how you can just start with the simple posts, whether it's, you know, once a month or once a week. You know, it's just about being consistent in something that you like. And then you can go and it can evolve from there. But I think it's something that's been really cool because, you know, for a long time, we're underneath our helmets. So people might recognize the name, but they might not recognize the face, depending on where you fell with your university or your team, whether you were the man or you were just a blue collar worker. Well, the platform gives you an opportunity to let people into your world and that they can see the name and contribute to the face. So there's definitely a lot of different platforms out there, and the NFL Legends Community can help guys with that platform.
What are you into? What is important to you? And is that solely based upon the Legends Community? Is there diversity in branding for you? Is that brand centralized to Mike Rucker represents fill in the blank?
Yeah, I think that that's a great question. And I think that I'll have multiple points. I think for me, it's community. So now I can encompass that community things with fundraising or getting guys to go, maybe hunting or fishing. It's about community. And I think, you know, now that you said it, you know, this past Saturday, I was fortunate enough with the Carolina Panthers to kind of do this inaugural girls flag football jamboree. And for whatever reason, it just hit me some way. And so now I feel like that's my flag bearer. That's the thing that I want to pick up now is to help shepherd in women's flag football. And it hits on so many different points. And I'm excited about that. And being able to bring that into high school, make it a sport. It's something that, you know, is a goal for maybe to get that into the Olympics.
And scholarships, sure.
Scholarships. It's already being rolled out on the NAIA level and mm-hmm. want to continue to build that. So I think that that's something that hit me this weekend that I think that that's going to be something that I want to shepherd into my community. And so it's constantly changing, but I think it's going to center around some type of community work.
Now, that mindset to be able to identify something that speaks to your spirit, speaks to your passion, the understanding of what it takes to be able to get there, that work that you're talking about, where did your work ethic come from? Where did that start? Because I know your career, and the reason why I love doing conversations with a legend, Ruck, is because these new school cats could learn so much from guys like yourself, but it's become more current effect, more current impact, and there's less emphasis and there's less attention on guys who have experienced it and have gone through it. So that's why I love doing this and giving the platform and the voice to be able to say, listen, this is my mindset. This is how it applied to me. This was, you know, why I was able to be great at what it is that I did. I made Pro Bowls. I played great in college. I dominated in high school. Where does that come from for you, Ruck?
Without a shadow of a doubt, it came from my grandma. Now, there's been multiple stops and multiple people, but when you talk about the tip of the spear, start with my grandma. And I say that is because I would definitely classify her as old school. She passed away a couple years ago at 95.
God bless. But
growing up, when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, when I was starting this dream of wanting to play football, my grandfather had ALS. He was in World War II. He was 6'7", 250 pounds, but he had ALS. He was wheelchair bound. Now, this is before all the technology. This is like early 80s, okay. Right? And so my grandma helped take care of me, helped raise me. There was a lot of physical work, right? So getting him, a 6'7", 250-pound man, into a station wagon every single day to bathe him, right, to feed him, and to hold down the fort on top of that, that's where you talk about work, right? No one's going to come save you, right? If she don't do it, it don't get done, right? It don't get done. And so, and this is a grown man and grandpa that she has to now, when you talk about marriage, it's for the good and the bad. And for me to be able to see that hit me a certain way. And that stayed and instilled in me what hard work looks like. And it's not necessarily glamorous, right? Everybody don't get to see that. Sometimes they just see the end result. They just see grandpa rolling in the car. They don't know all the things that had to go in to getting him ready for the day. To get him in that car, to get him ready for evening. And that stayed with me. I would say the other thing is my dad. He would work double shifts. He would work the graveyard shift just to be at my football games, right? Again, you see the end result. I see him in the stands. I didn't know that he traded a shift. He had to add on a shift to be able to make it there.
That's dope.
That kind of stuff stuck with me, that life isn't easy. And we can control what we can control, but there's certain things that life throws us that are outside of our control. It's about what we do afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that's always kind of stuck with me through life. And I truly feel those two people have helped my foundation and who I am as a man, as a father, as a husband, as a community leader, try to take those same basic principles. I truly believe old school, new school, certain principles don't change no matter what. And I feel like those things I learned from my grandmother and my dad are solid, that are classic forever, that won't change.
Man, I love that. All right, let me throw this one out at you. Mentioning your grandmom and your pops, that is easily something in today's society, today's culture, that you could label victim, that they were victimized. They're victims of circumstance. Your grandma, victim of circumstance of having to do that with your grandpops. Your dad, the victim of circumstance, having to do that graveyard shift and make it through to get that second shift and to do all of those jobs and still be present for you. What's your take on victim versus overcomer? Because it seems as though today's young people, today's culture in general, is all about finding the victim and creating this cancellation of anything and everything that may challenge actually persevering, or this idea and this concept of, hold on, wait a minute, dealing with adversity. What's your take on that idea of there could always be the excuse and figure out a way as to why I shouldn't be helping my husband the way I'm doing, why I shouldn't be doing a graveyard shift because of how it makes my body feel or how tired I may feel or drawn, you know, this whole thing drawn out, the monotony of it? What's your take on that?
One coach says it's not how you start always, but it's how you finish. And so there are certain things that whether we're born into situations or, you get a disease or something that you have no control over. It could be some outside circumstance. It could be weather that, you know what, a tornado came and took our house and now we're homeless, right? These are things that we didn't ask for. We didn't make that decision, but we were dealt that hand. Now it's about what do we do next? And so I think that everybody can find something where something like that's happened in their life. But I always go back to community. I feel like everybody, whether they had, you know, two parents in their home, a single parent, whether grandma or the aunt or uncle raised them. There's somebody that you can point to that says, look, I'm willing to invest in you without wanting something in return. There's just something in the human spirit that says, okay, this person doesn't want anything. And I think that you need to look at that person or that situation and hang on to that, because a lot of times we'll go to, well, I didn't have a silver spoon, so this is why this, you know? And so that's kind of my philosophy with it, that, you know, life isn't going to be smooth. I always say life is really a storm. You're either going in one, you're in the middle of it, or you're coming out of one, you know? And so when you take that philosophy and I say, look, I can surround myself with good people, or it could just be that one person. A lot of times we think that we need a group of people. And at the end of the day, that we can see the stories out there where someone has pulled themselves out of a situation the way that we grew up. Okay. You can look at a situation, you can look at your situation, how you grew up or the situation you're in. And there's a story, a successful story out there that you can look at that shows you how that person got out of that. And I think if you can look at that, that can help you get out of it.
Do you have one?
I do. And I think that, you know, from when I go back to my dad, he didn't have, and just being honest, his dad was out there, right? Mm-hmm. So his mom raised three boys. And so he didn't necessarily have that stable father in his home, mm-hmm. right? So he knows what that looks like, right? Drugs and all that stuff around him. He gets that. But he says, I want something different. And so the one thing that he told me, he played basketball and he said, I don't care where I go as far as a basketball scholarship, but wherever I pick will be the furthest place from where I'm at right now. Right. So he ended up going playing basketball in Wyoming. We grew up in Missouri. He went and played basketball in Wyoming. That was the at least change the trajectory of that family atmosphere and the way that thing was going, to break that family curse, whatever you want to call it. And that was that to me set him aside on a different path. Now, fast forward, how that affects me is that now he's saying, look, I'll do whatever I need to do, then now my kids will be better than I am. And so if that means I got to work a double shift, if I got to work 11 to 7 and pull a double, I will do that. But then they'll be better off. And so that has always stuck with me. And we can go on and on about these different family situations. And then you got situations where they didn't do that. And you see the end result. We know what that end result's going to do. We know where that end result's going to take us. There's enough history and enough data for that. But going back to grandma and dad, those are some of the situations that helped me become the person I am today.
So grew up in Wyoming. What was that like, man? I've never been to Wyoming. I'm sure a lot of people have never been to Wyoming. What was that experience like?
Well, I grew up in Missouri, but when he went
to Missouri, Wyoming. In Missouri.
My dad
right.
went to Wyoming. But growing up in Missouri, there's a lot of farms. So you've got a lot of farmers, a lot of cattle. We grew up fishing in the ponds, right? So we had this outdoor piece to it. But then, you know, we were 20 minutes north of Kansas City. So then we had the city part, you know?
Okay.
For dad growing up in the rough part of the neighborhood, going to Wyoming to play basketball was something totally different that put him outside his comfort zone.
A lot
of times we stay in our comfort zones,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, it's like a diamond, right? A diamond only works if it has pressure,
mm-hmm.
right? And being comfortable, that's not necessarily pressure. Getting outside of my comfort zone, now you've got some pressure. Right. Mm-hmm, and now that allowed him to be someone different or see something different or see something that he wasn't familiar with, people that looked like him. Right. Mm-hmm. So when he went to Wyoming, people didn't necessarily look like him. It was a total different atmosphere growing up.
I get it.
It gave him a different perspective. And then he spun that in a positive way.
Mike, this is phenomenal stuff. You get to Nebraska. Everybody wants to go to a major college. Everybody wants to have that opportunity to play for a national title. so many times in going to school, our first thought is, am I going to start immediately? Am I going to start right away? And if you don't, there's the idea of failure. There's depression. There's denial. There's all kinds of emotions that go into it. You're grounded through community. You're grounded through traditional values and how you approach things. Can you give me an instance, a situation where that played a part in you being able to cope, deal with, handle, get through difficult situations that you may have found yourself in when once you got to Nebraska, just based upon the idea of what this transfer portal represents now to players? It seems as though at the first sign of something not working out, I'm jumping right into that portal and I'm going to go run to something else, run to what could be a better situation now. I think that the portal is good in some cases, but I also feel like it has become an easy way out and could, in my estimation, what I'm seeing is creating an opportunity for guys to further, you know, maybe what they've grew up in, trying to run away from, you know, issues and not meet them head on, or thinking that the grass is greener on the other side, you know, just different ideas of, to me, what I don't believe to be traditional beliefs and thoughts of a winning mindset. What would be a defining moment or moments where you know at school where those fundamental values of how your mind is wired played a part in your career?
It's so funny you asked that, and I haven't told you the story. That's why I'm smiling the way I am.
All right.
Because you know, I'll take a step back in high school. So my sophomore year, I'm playing varsity and we make the playoffs. And I wasn't highly recruited, but we were playing this team, and it was Webb City. And all we could hear about was that they had this guy that was being nationally recruited across the country. He played tight end. He played defensive end. I played tight end. I played defensive end. And we're in the playoffs. They're coming to us, and it was going to be a battle. And so this dude's name, his name was Grant Winstrom.
Okay. I know that you played with him.
And so
you ended up playing with him.
There you go. So we played our sophomore year against each other in the playoffs. And that's how I got on Nebraska's radar, because they were watching and recruiting him and they saw me. And so then I popped up on the radar. Fast forward my senior year, we go down there, we play each other again, became friends. Coach Brown recruited us and we both signed on the dotted line to go to the University of Nebraska, that's both awesome. To play defensive end. Okay. Yes, so yes. That's kind of how the start was. Now, I didn't know this at the time, but every guy has his ego and like, hey, what I'm bringing to the table and how good I am. Coaching wise, they were a little bit more developed down there at Webb City than we were. We were still kind of old school, grab your jersey block like this. They were being taught to use your hand to punch and pull. So we get to Nebraska. We both are playing the same position. We're in the same room. Well, I'm asked to redshirt. He's able to play as a true freshman. Now, mentally, you're saying like, hey, I have these same abilities. You know, why am I being asked to redshirt? And why is he able to play? So there is problem number one.
Okay.
So now this mindset has creeped in, and now you're comparing yourself to this next person.
And that's all kinds of stuff.
Why?
You can stop liking him as a friend.
That's right.
You
that's
stop
right.
believing in yourself.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'll say this. There's nothing wrong with asking why, mm-hmm. right? But it's what you do after that I think defines how this road's going to go. So going to coach, just want to know, hey, you know, I have this ability. What do I need to do? Why is this going on? Right. Versus like going in
the victim.
Noise, right?
He wasn't the victim.
That's right. So after we doing this, coach says, hey, I learned that his techniques are more advanced than mine. I'm like, okay, that's valid. All right. So my mindset was, I know that I picked this school, the coaching staff, the program for a reason. Now, I'm not going to let an individual that I've created, this the space that I've created with this individual and this ego, now say, okay, I'm just going to throw all that data out the window and now make an emotional decision. It was like, all right, how about we take this red shirt year and enjoy it? All right, we're going to go work. We're going to get bigger. We're going to get stronger. We're going to get better at our technique. And we're going to get to enjoy it, right? So that's what I did in my red shirt year, right? And so as we move forward, I'm starting to get more playing time. We're good. So in 93, my red shirt year, 94, we beat Miami for the national championship. So now you're getting more outside influence. You're getting more cameras, more interview, more pub, and you're getting more recruits that now want to come here. So now we're being flooded with other defensive ends that are good. They're now making this log jam. Problem number two, what are we going to do? Right? So we dealt with problem one. Now two is now we're getting more people in here, more competition. What are we going to do? That is where we double down on ourselves. And myself, we're going to double down. Again, we know we're at the right place. We're getting the pub. Our goal is to get to the National Football League. So all that's lining up. Problem number two is we're going to double down on ourselves. I'm confident in my ability and what I'm bringing to the table. So we're staying put. So we win a national championship in 95. 96, we come back. We go to the Big 12 championship. Again, we're getting this outside influence. 1997, we're starting. Again, we have a ton of competition. Any of these guys could have started any university at that point in time. But again, doubling down on myself. To make a long story short to your question, I stuck it out because I knew that my initial decision and why I wanted to go there, from the coaches to the university to where we were at as a program, and to get to my fourth, which was to get to the National Football League. And doubling down on my ability. So to the younger generation, you do see that where guys will jump ship pretty quickly. And that's where I would try to apply some of these things. There could be a situation where it warrants going somewhere else. Let's say the coach that recruited me now is gone. Okay, so now there might be a different philosophy come in. Now I need to reevaluate some of those things of why I went to this university. So I think that it's prevalent to have that option, but that red button isn't just because my feelings got hurt or because they recruited somebody else. I need to hit that button and I need to leave, right? We always think the grass is greener on the other side, and that might not necessarily be true, right? Because the dirt, the soil might be different over there on the other side of that fence. Right, there's a fence for a reason. You're dividing something for a reason, right? And so if that soil's different on that side, or you've got, you know, a different product over there, it might not always be what it was where you were at. So that was my philosophy. That's me. I decided to double down on myself and my ability of why I was there, and it worked out because I was able to get drafted. I was able to fulfill my goal, play 9 years in the league, and still have a friendship with those guys, and they made me better. That made me better finding out the why. Like,
yeah.
Nothing wrong with the why, but it's what you do after that that I think really defines the person.
Indeed, indeed. All right, so, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't ask about you. You brought it up. So, 94, y'all playing. Now, I got to tell you, I love me some Florida State. Mm-hmm. My favorite player, one of my favorite players, was Derrick Brooks. Now, I got to be honest. Coming into the game, I was tormented. I was conflicted because I love me some Lawrence Phillips. Now, that's a sad one. That's a sad story. And if you want to go into that, we could go into that. And maybe we should, because it has everything to do with what we do. We were in so many different programs together at the league offices, and one of them was being a transitional coach, but we'll touch on that. I want to stay here in this 94 game. What is one of your fondest memories? Because that both of those teams were loaded. And I mean, when I say loaded, y'all were loaded. And so was Florida State. And you got two legendary coaches in Osborne and Bowden, you know, going head to head at it. You know, you have a running attack that you know, your line of scrimmage, you know, I believe was Brandon Stye still there at that time?
I was in high school, so I was watching every single game. And Stye against Florida State, that's when we had the kick go wide left.
Yes.
So we fell short, and I felt like I wanted to be part of the next generation that got it done.
You were with Frost.
I was with Tommy Frazier the first 2 years. Let's see, 94 was with Tommy, and then 95. And then 96. On Frosty and them.
And that was with Frost.
So okay. I was there.
Take me back to watching it to when you played in it. How about that? Give me that.
First of all, Florida, Florida State, Miami, all three hitting on all cylinders.
Right. And y'all battled all of them.
Like you had three miniature NFL teams right there in the state Florida. Like they were hitting on all cylinders. When you go back and look at those rosters, you're seeing Pro Bowlers, Hall of Famers, just ballers. So in 93 in high school, watching them play, you know, Florida State and that kick going wide left, it just felt like, man, again, I know where I'm going. I know that this is the right place. And it starts at the top with Coach Osborne, right? And his belief and being able to steer that ship. So in 94, 95, when I come in, we play. I'm redshirt. This is the story. So I redshirt. So I'm going up against Stye, Zadiska, Weegar, Aaron Graham. Four out of the five went to the NFL and played multiple years in the league. So again, the mindset here, I am going up against, I'm a redshirt. And so I am sharpening my tools against the best. And I just remember like my redshirt class, there was Jason Wiltz who played in the league and Jay Foreman that played in the league. And that was my freshman class that came in. But we took on the mindset that we were Warren Sapp, right? We were Ray Lewis, right? And we had to get our guys ready. So in practice, we were playing our game. We were redshirting, but that was our bowl game, getting them ready for the real game.
That was with James Stewart and all them dudes.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. And we're getting them ready. So we end up going down to Miami and beating the Hurricanes.
Yeah, beat them. Yeah.
Come back in 95. I'm playing. We have Florida out in Arizona in the Fiesta Bowl. Again, having that pride. Now I'm playing. So now that you're getting the fruits of the labor. But they made us better. Those teams made us better. And I'm blessed at that point in time. I got to be honest with you. I thought every campus was experiencing our campus life out there. I thought this was normal, but now being away from it, looking back, we were totally blessed to be in that period of time, to be able to play the game that we love at a high level. And to still have those relationships.
That's amazing. Let's talk about Lawrence Phillips, because that's one of the most, there's two running backs that I can say, well, three really, that come to mind when I think about just tremendously gifted running backs, at a different level, gifted. Warrick Dunn was one. Fred Taylor is my favorite. And I have no idea why he's not in the Hall of Fame yet. And Lawrence Phillips, the size, the rare size, because people didn't realize how big Phillips was. He was big. He was yoked up.
Yes.
And he ran like he was little.
Right.
And I can recall watching him and James Stewart in the same game, and I was like, I'm gonna be a running back. I was 6'3", and I was playing tailback because of watching the way they played, and my style of running back was like how Lawrence Phillips was. I was a slasher, but I was 6'3".
Yeah.
So the idea of seeing someone as gifted as he was, I just knew we were going to see a guy that was a Hall of Fame caliber guy do his thing in the pros. It didn't work out that way. Sad, unfortunate story. You know, he was fighting his demons. But in a case like that, how do we assist one another when faced with a loved one, a brother, a teammate that falls into that dark side of how life is impacting them?
You know, it's a great question and it's valid. You know, obviously this was back in the mid-90s. Everything that you said about LP, he would have, to me, he would have been a Hall of Famer. I mean, you know, 220, 225, you know, maybe 2-3% body fat, could catch the ball, could run the ball, and was just a man among boys. You know, when you look at his home life and him coming to Nebraska and his relationship with Coach Osborne and him helping him to come along. And we talk about mental health, right? That was more, it was, mental health was an issue then, it's an issue now. But I think now we brought it to light to where we don't have the stigma that it's you're weak if you talk about it. Back then it was like, it was kind of a mark and you didn't talk about it, you know, and it was kept in the dark. And I think that, you know, Coach did what he could do to get him connected with the right people on the mental health side. And I think that the more that we can talk about it, I think that you even seen it this past week with some players coming out and saying, hey, look, I need to work on myself. I got some things going that I want to work on. I want to be better. And I think the ball has been moved in the right direction on that, that we know it's real and it's silent. And just because it's silent doesn't mean that it's not going on. And I think with LP, you know, you could see the results of it. But as far as, you know, being able to be open about it and that, you know, once you go from college to the NFL, you know, back then were those resources there, you know, like it wasn't talked about like it is now. And I think that's what the NFL Legends community has done. And there's pots of resources to help with mental health. So being able to talk to an individual and say, look, there is help out there. There are dollars out there to help you. So let's get you directed to the right resources. And I think that's again, coming back from that service attitude, that you don't make them feel ashamed about it, that we can talk about it as much as you want to, and then we can get you to that professional that can take you to the next step. And I think the ball is being moved in the right direction. We still got a lot of work to do. And then it's also empowering family members and friends to be able to help usher people in and to help bring awareness to that individual, to the people that know where the resource is at. So again, it goes back to that community type atmosphere that we are our brother's keeper, you know, yes. And we know life isn't easy. And it could mean a family member. You might be fine, but maybe mm-hmm. a family member is suffering. So how do you deal with that, right? And bringing people to that, Inaka that works for the NFL, she's been tremendous at helping us break down barriers as men of color, and getting role playing and to how do we deal with our kids when mental health. So that whole issue is now being laid out there and light being brought to it. And it's a blessing. It really
That's
is.
That's awesome. Calvin Ridley is the one who, the receiver for the Atlanta Falcons, stepped away for mental health purposes. And, you know, years in our time, Mike, to step away for something like that, we would have been deemed crazy. We would have been written off. We might have lost our job based off of saying we needed to step away. But, man, when you use an example like a Lawrence Phillips, right, like if it was something that deep, where a person needed to step away and address themselves and get that help, they shouldn't have to do that on their own. They shouldn't have to feel alone in that moment because they're doing something that's actually, in essence, the epitome of being responsible in the scenario. So these are great conversations that need to continue to ensue. There are more people dealing with mental health and emotional issues than not, in my estimation of it. And sometimes it's smaller, sometimes it's larger, but the idea of it is we're all still dealing with it some way, somehow. The daily pressures of what it is that we have going on, those are the things that you ultimately have to, you know, you have to fight it. You have to fight it. You have to be able to beat it, and to have the resources that you need is, mm-hmm. to me, that is so, so important. And speaking of resources, I want to get your opinion on NIL, the naming, image, likeness situation. This is also a situation and a scenario where guys are going to need guidance. And here's the thing, naming, image, and likeness, those are things that apply to us as legends in the legends community. And so for me, I wonder, you know, how I can help, you know, and I wonder what that means to NFL legends, the naming, image, likeness. I wonder what it means for high school kids. I wonder what it means for youth level kids. I deal with kids all the time. I deal with high school guys. I mentor and I watch these guys go into college. I watch how I struggle. Most of us struggle. I don't care if you came from a good home. You don't have to be dirt poor to struggle financially in college. It's just a way of life, is you don't have a whole lot of money. So in looking at the naming, image, likeness opportunity, guys having the ability to generate money at the college level and at some point in high school, this will apply as well. What is your, do you like this? Do you not like it? Do you, what would your advice be to those? Because that education, it's vast. It's a vast array of things that they need to learn. But what would be one of the first things or one of the focal points that you would focus in on with this new evolution of how the college athlete is going to have their opportunities moving forward?
Yeah, I think the space, it can be really slippery, right? So we've kind of been way to the left where it's just been like, it's my way or the highway, you know? And it's so unfortunate because I think that there was plenty enough time for opportunity for that needle to be shifted more to the middle with some structure around it. And because this isn't a new issue. This issue has been going on for a long time, right?
Indeed.
You know, before you were punished if you transferred, but coaches can come and go when they wanted. And so all of a sudden, like now, I feel like you've shifted way over here. And the reason why I say way over here is because on paper, it sounds great. Like, hey, I have this opportunity to capitalize on this, which I'm all for. But where I'm nervous about are the other people coming in. I mean, it's one thing to go to college and to have a degree and still go to the NFL and feel like you've got people around you. There's still this learning curve and there's still this trust. What do I base on? How do I find an agent? How do I find a financial advisor? What are the questions? When we grew up, we didn't have anybody in that realm. So this is all by trial and error, right? With some structure, maybe the school helps you. Maybe the NFL has a class or some type of seminar, but it's still rough. Now you take that to the college high school level. Where does that structure come from? Who was telling you to give you some guiding points on, hey, this is what you need to do. Do you need to structure this way? You know, if something goes south, is there a lawsuit? You know, are you in an LLC? Like, there's so many questions that
I have taxes,
you know? So that's where my worry comes in.
Agents,
you
managers,
know?
Handlers,
all that at the high school level, you know, like, so it's hard enough just to deal with being a star at high school. So I'm not knocking it, but I do feel like there's a lot of traps out there that need to be dealt with. And I don't know where that structure is coming in at. I know some of the right things to do. I think that you need to ask questions and maybe try to find some people that you trust to help, you know, navigate and find some people that can answer your questions. But then sometimes you don't even know what questions to ask.
Yeah.
You know, so it's almost like you need this third independent body that can help navigate and educate the athletes that they can go to even say, okay, what questions do I even ask?
Does that come from a legends community?
I think any point's a great starting point. And I think that, you know, us being legends, we've been through a lot of these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of them have worked out, some haven't. And so and to that, be able to
it's all
hey,
makes
look,
sense.
Say, hey, this is how I picked my first agent.
That's right.
It didn't turn out. And here are some of the questions I asked I didn't ask. Here's some questions I should have asked and start making a bullet point here, young athlete. You know, here you can go to this website or here, whether it's open source, and just say, here's some questions you can start with. And if you can find some people that are reputable, that can speak, you know, into the athletes' lives, I think that would help, because the questions, and we can say, hey, ask the questions, but if you don't know what questions to ask, then where's the starting point? So I think the Legends community, legends of the game, it could start anywhere, but I think that discussion needs to happen.
Indeed. All right. Now, this has been a pleasure, Ruck. I'm telling you, you're one of my peers, but you're also one of the people that I looked up to. You know, you're a little older than me. And again, I've seen you play, and I respected what you were able to do at the college level. I respected what you were able to do in the pro level. And it's just one of those, there's certain names that come up when you hear about certain teams, and your name always came up whenever they talked about the Carolina Panthers. And I had an opportunity to share a Pro Bowl year with you as well, and got to meet you and know you on a personal level. What's important to Mike Rucker for his legacy to be? Have you thought about this? Have you answered it? Like, what do you want your legacy to be? What do you want to be known for? What do you want to be remembered by? What would be the greatest compliment if somebody was delivering the final words on your life?
You know, I think that, you know, when I'm gone, if someone would say, like, hey, I met him and he impacted my life in a positive way. And that can mean in any different kind of way. It could be a lot of different ways, right? And I look at how on the football side, Reggie White, Kevin Green, Chuck Smith, Julius Peppers, how they affected my life in so many different ways on the football field and off the football field. And that's something I can say, you know. You know, two of the four aren't here anymore.
Two of the four are gone. Yeah.
And so with Reggie and Kevin Green both being gone. So if I'm gone, I would say job well done if someone said, hey, he affected my life in a positive way, whether it was verbal or nonverbal, whether they saw me from afar or whether they had a direct, you know, conversation or a touch point with me. I think that I want to leave this place better than when I was here, right? Mm-hmm, so just like Dad did for me, he made it better for him. So if I can make it better for my kids or my community, that's a plus. That's a win in my book. And I think that's kind of the way I would answer that, because you never really know how people really feel. Sometimes you really don't know how you've impacted
people. Wish you could be a fly on the wall, right?
That's right, until you're gone.
Yeah.
So I've made it a point to tell people now, right? And this really hit me when Grandma was gone, and I spoke at her funeral, that she wasn't able to necessarily hear everything at that point in time. But when I got inducted to the St. Joe Hall of Fame, you know, about a month or two ago, I was able to tell my parents what they meant to me. And I think that's important as we go through life. If someone means something, tell them now, versus having to go up on the podium and they're gone and to be able to tell that story.
Indeed. Love that, man. Love you, bro. Man, powerful words from a powerful man. If you don't know who Mike Rucker is, you better ask somebody. You better check it out. Go to Google, type that name up in there and see what this man's body of work is. But not only on the football field, a constant pillar, a constant example, mentor, guide off the field as well as a man And that's the measure of success, truly, in my book, in context, being a man and handling things in a responsible manner. This is another, this was an amazing episode of Up On Game Presents Conversations with a Legend, Mike Rucker. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Check us out. Follow us on our social media handles as well, Up On Game Network. Continue to support. The support has been amazing. The just the amount of views and the feedback that is being received. Each interview has had such an amazing impact and astounding insight. So, Ruck, I appreciate you coming on, man. And just know this, I will be coming for you, because these conversations need to take place on college campuses. They need to take place in front of our current legends. They need to take place in front of our active players. They need to take place at the high school level. Mm-hmm. And we got to get enough of us that understand it and get it, where we can be that resource and really give back in a way where we can see the impact that you're talking about with not only the younger generations, but our peers and even our old heads that just need to have a little bit of encouragement, need to have a little bit of guidance. There's so many opportunities out there for us. It's just us knowing our worth. And sometimes we just need to be able to remind one another what our worth is. And it wasn't just putting the helmet on and putting the cleats on and running around on a football field. It actually goes far beyond that. So I appreciate everything that you're doing, man. You've been in the trenches for a long time, rocking and rolling to make sure that you're making a difference in our community. And man, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show, bro.
And appreciate your platform and what you're doing and getting that voice out there, brother. And love you, man.
Yeah, man. Back at you. All right. Well, here we go. Here we go. Mike Rucker. Y'all know what it is. Check him out. I'm going to let him go. I want to keep talking, but we're going to wrap. Y'all take care. I'm LeVar Arrington. This is Up On Game Presents Conversations with a Legend.